You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Engage.
78 years have passed since the days of the original USS Enterprise. Now a new galaxy starship has been designed.
Transporter Chief, beam our listeners aboard. Welcome to Galaxy Class, the Star Trek The Next Generation podcast. Here on the BQN. Oh, more people are beaming in. Here we are. It is time for a Bat'leth battle, which means I'm your host, Diplomatic Standard Bearer Kevin Scarf. And with me is the whole crew, Counselor Amy Nelson. Hello.
Hello.
The Chief Recreational Officer, Rhea Papagiorgio. Hello.
Hello.
And guy who's watching people change for the gym, Joe Keegan.
Or composer. Let's go with that.
Composer. We're going with composer.
We're going highbrow like TNG.
We're going Nella Darren.
So how's everybody doing? Welcome to the end of October, the beginning of November.
Yeah.
Are we ready for the upcoming winter season?
No. Yep.
Busy season.
It got cold there, Rhea?
Yes. I'm wearing long sleeves and pants.
Thank you very much. It is cold.
Yes.
I mean, you know, 70s, but.
I know. Below 80 equals winter. It's winter. Yes. I was not expecting that. I feel like bait and switch.
It's funny to hear you say that when you just moved to Arizona.
Yeah, it happened fast. I was caught off guard.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it is currently 2 degrees Celsius and clear here in central Ontario.
Hmm.
And Kevin, I'm liking the haircut. Looks very good.
Thank you. I got it cut real short because I have to wear a wig soon, many days. So Christmas season is a-coming, ho, ho, ho. And I've got a busy season coming up, so I'm excited about that.
Kevin, don't say ho, ho, ho. It's still October. You'll get to say ho, ho, ho before. Well, maybe you do, but like not on Galaxy Class. Just don't.
I'm sorry. It's done now. So
okay.
I will move along. And my season starts next weekend. So
people want
family Christmas portraits done before Christmas. So
yeah, for their cards and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it.
So everyone else is good. Anything new and exciting?
Well, we have the final episode of Lower Decks, really good.
Yes, it was. I love that show so much.
It was very fun. We got a nice Admiral Picard reference in that episode. I thought that was yes. fun.
Hilarious. I mean, they're just those writers are geniuses.
Yeah,
I loved how it sort of tied everything up in a nice, neat little package. Mm-hmm. All the storylines seem to wrap up in a little bow. So. Mm-hmm.
Except for one. And it's funny because for like the first time, I actually kind of semi-predicted the way things would tie up. But I'm still waiting for the Peanut Hamper Agamas collaboration resulting in Takeover of the Galaxy.
I wondered if they were part of the AI that was running the Texas class ships at first. When I heard the voice of whichever the name of the ship was. Was it the Houston or the
Alito?
Alito, yeah, and I thought, oh, maybe that sort of sounds like Jeffrey Combs, but I don't think it was.
No, but I bet you they're not going to let that thread drop, like the way they brought T'Lyn back after an entire season. So,
and the post-credit scene, do we spoil it, Rhea? Because the other two didn't even know it was there.
Oh, let's not spoil it, but I see that potentially tying into something else in the future. So.
And then because we're living in a time of plenty, there was the Prodigy premiere this week, too.
Yes.
Which I haven't seen yet. So talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah. Well, all we'll say is they finally get to meet someone from Starfleet.
Mm-hmm. Haven't they already? Janeway?
They've only met the Janeway hologram. They haven't actually met a
Oh,
a Starfleet, physical Starfleet personnel person.
Got it.
Yeah. Yes. Things don't go quite the way we want them to, which makes for good television.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It does not disappoint.
Yeah, this is a, you know, this is a kid show that I love.
Yes. Aaron Waltke, we love you. You're amazing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, shall we just journey on and see what our listeners have to say about our previous episodes? Or do we have anything else we need to talk about now here in the upfront part? All right. We will
see what our listeners have to say.
Okay.
Logs accessed.
So we had some feedback about our Trivia with Jim episode from a couple of weeks back. Rhea, did you want to read the first one there?
Yes, my dear friend, former supervisor from the Quad Cities and father of two wonderful daughters, Alex Ortega says, great episode of Trivia. He didn't bark at me.
Whoa. Excited about that Trivia.
Why is my mute not working?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Take I'll that again, Rhea.
Yeah, and I'm blanking out. Lydia, that's her name. Okay. I was blanking out on Alex's daughter's name that came to Chicago.
Right.
My dear friend and former supervisor and Quad Cityan and father of Star Trek fan Lydia, Alex Ortega says, great episode of Trivia. There were some deep cuts. I definitely have a hard time too.
Yeah, that was not an easy game last time.
No, it was, I think, a great balance of hard and less hard questions. Jim does such a good job with those.
He does.
And that he gets those bonus or the extra hints. Like, he's very prepared. That's what I love about it.
And the topic titles were hilarious. So thanks again, Jim. You rock.
Yes. Well, speaking of Jim, Amy, do you want to read Jim's comment?
Yes. Jim says, finding the right balance between easy, medium, and hard questions can be a real challenge sometimes. Joe was still entertaining with his answers, though. And then I said, the Queen is always a great answer. And Jim says, Angela Lansbury, too.
Angela Lansbury.
Yes.
Angela Lansbury should be the answer to everything. About like 42.
Agreed.
Our friend Karen Bork says, wow, Jim, your questions are so hard. Karen, I totally agree with you. I'm going crazy after that quiz. Good job, though. My husband, who is not even a Trekkie, enjoys your trivia sessions.
Yay.
Thank you, Karen.
That's awesome.
Good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's actually good to know because, you know, sometimes my students are like, what, you know, let me listen to your podcast. And I'm like, they're going to be bored to death. So it's good to know some episodes that non-Trekkies enjoy so I can share that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that's about all the feedback we had. So why don't we move along to our main event?
This is the captain. Senior officers will report to my ready room immediately.
So this is Bat'leth Battle 28. Aquiel, Season 6, Episode 13, versus Loud as a Whisper. We've taken a listener poll. We have watched these episodes ourselves. We are ready to duke it out and see which one comes out on top. So why don't we start with Aquiel, because that's how he came up in the order. So who would like to do a quick summary and recap of Aquiel?
Well, you know, Amy wants to do Loud as a Whisper. So.
I know. I was going to say, Joe or Rhea, who would like to do Aquiel? Yeah.
Who wants the punishment of having to do Aquiel?
I will do it. Okay. The much, much beloved episode, Aquiel.
Maligned? You mean maligned?
I would say maybe over maligned episode. But anyway, you know, I don't even remember how the episode starts, except that
the communication array is going down, and so these urgent messages that have to be transported back and forth, you know, the stakes are extremely high.
Extremely, extremely.
You know, the Pony Express is broken down, so this is, you know, high stakes.
the Subspace Pony Express. So at any rate, the Enterprise D goes to investigate. They find the station unmanned or unwomaned, but they do find, I love when Beverly says cellular residue. I don't know, just, anyway, they find cellular residue. So they're investigating what happened in this station. Geordi starts looking at the files of an officer presumed dead, Aquia Lunari, and, you know, she bears a striking resemblance to Dr. Lexi Carver from Days of Our Lives, so he has kind of a crush on her. There's a dog. So it's a mystery of what happened to this station and who killed Aquiel. There was evidence of some Klingon interference, so Captain Picard contacts, you know, the Klingon Empire, pulls some strings, drops Gowron's name a few times. Klingons investigate, only to find that Aquiel's not actually dead. She ran off in a shuttlecraft and looks and acts very, very guilty. But Geordi continues to develop a relationship with her, even though there's an ongoing investigation. Things start to get a little creepy between the two. And long story short, they find out that there's a shape-shifting coalescent creature. Now, I can't remember what it was called. Is actually the one that killed Ensign Rocha. And the Klingons stole the codes, and Geordi wants to put in a good word for Aquiel, even though she's done nothing but bad stuff, and the end. And the dog did it.
Yes. Yeah. So the whole episode is set up like a classic murder mystery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when they've come to the conclusion that there is this being that has taken over the shape of somebody on the station, not a single person thought it could have been the dog. Like,
yeah,
yes, there were two humans on the ship, or humanoids on the ship, but there was also this dog. And who brings a dog on a space station anyway? Well, I guess lots of people do.
Well, you can say people because it's not that common.
Right.
No, Data has
20
cat.
Cats on the Enterprise D, though.
They have a nursery full of puppies.
Somewhere.
So... yeah, Aquiel has a dog. That's fine, but it's a large dog. It's not a small dog. It's not
a Porthos.
Yeah, it's not a Chihuahua. It's like a big dog, and nobody thought. Oh, it just makes our heroes look dumb.
Humanoid chauvinists. I'm glad we're past that now.
The so, effect. Jumped out at me, the coalescent organism, which is the name it got. The effect that they used for it just reminded me of early Odo.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that this episode was out at the same time, the same week as Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 8, Dax.
Really?
One where Dax is accused of murder.
Oh, so we had two Star Trek murder mysteries the same week.
Yes. And I figured like maybe the DS9 special effects guys created the Odo effect previously and they just stole it for the dog.
Or they just used a lower resolution version because I didn't think it was as good as the Odo effect was, even if it's
true.
Yeah, and on rewatching it, my first thought was, oh wait, could this possibly be a changeling? But Beverly had a different explanation, but I'm surprised. I didn't realize that DS9 was already on the air when this one aired.
It just started.
Yeah.
So they hadn't come up with the changeling plotline yet. The war hadn't started. None of that had come up. So, as we know, we have a couple of topics that we use to determine the winner here. So why don't we talk about guest stars on Aquiel?
Yes.
Well,
Renee Jones, thank you, Maria, for bringing that up. I was like, oh my gosh, she looks so familiar. And lo and behold, Days of Our Lives, loved her. Lexi Carver.
Yep.
She was the daughter of the lieutenant or the police officer or detective of the show.
Married to?
I thought it was the daughter. Yeah, Abe.
She was married to Abe.
Oh, that's the wife?
Yeah. the much younger wife. Funny how that works.
That's right. Okay, yeah.
So I specifically remember seeing this episode when I was in baseball and I was on the road, and I always watched my two soaps were Days of Our Lives and General Hospital, and just flipping through the channels one afternoon and TNG was on and this episode was on. And so I'm like, oh, it's Dr. Lexi Carver. Ooh. So I guess that's probably why I have less vitriol toward this episode than most. I do have kind of a fond memory of.
Yeah. And she was also, I looked up her on IMDb and Fresh Prince of Bel Air. She was on Murder, She Wrote, as we know everyone in Hollywood.
With Angela Lansbury.
Yes.
Makes me
and
so happy.
21 Jump Street. So she's been around quite a bit. So nice to see her in Star Trek.
See, when you say Days of Our Lives in General Hospital, I'm aware of these things as an American kind of cult tradition. But I think I've maybe seen like 5 minutes of Days of Our Lives. Like when it was on during the day, when you were off school during summer or something, in General Hospital, mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen an episode of. Are they both soaps?
Yes.
Essentially, yes. Yeah. So it's like EastEnders or Coronation Street or one of our many plentiful soaps that we have over here.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. I've been watching both of them for like 40 years, but Days of Our Lives just went behind a paywall. But the nice thing is when I'm in Greece, I can get it, you know, like 6 years later, just on regular TV. So
you've been watching it since before you were born?
Sure.
Yeah, why not? The other guy, the Klingon guy, was Wayne Grace, who's been in quite a lot of Star Trek, actually. He played. So the Klingon names, there was a Morag and there was a Torag or a Torak, but it sounded like Torag. He also played the Cardassian Legate in Deep Space Nine's Wrongs Darker Than Death or Night. And he was Krell, a Klingon, in Enterprise episode Divergence.
Oh, wow. That's good to know.
Oh, he even played a Klingon in a Star Trek video game.
Yeah.
Ooh, so he's got a great Klingon. Like
yeah. Very, very good bone structure for a Klingon.
A Final Unity, it has to be said, was out in 1995, and it is by far one of the best Star Trek games ever. It's like a Star Trek episode, a TNG episode that you go through and you have to solve puzzles and find clues and get to the bottom of the mystery of what's going on.
He sadly died this past summer at the age of 82.
Oh wow. Well, our next next guest star also passed away a few years ago, Reg Cathy, who played Morag. And this was his only Star Trek appearance, but he did appear in an episode of Spencer for Hire with Avery Brooks.
Oh.
I can't take a Klingon seriously that's called Morag. Morags are like a popular women's name in Scotland. I don't know about rest of Canada and the US. Yeah, I know a ton of Morags.
It's not a hugely popular name here, but when I was a kid, there was this Canadian sketch show that was hosted by a married couple, and the show was called Smith and Smith, and their names were Steve and Morag.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so weirdly, having a female name diminishes his worth for you, Joe?
I just find it more funny than anything else that this strong warrior Klingon and his got what I would think is a traditional woman's name. So just think of like Morag. Your name's Morag. That's funny. Yeah.
Takes me out of the
narrative. Yes. It's a bit the same with Avengers. Was it Endgame? One of those big Avengers movies, and they've got the planet Morag.
Oh, yeah.
Really? It's a planet called a woman.
It's like going to the planet Sharon.
Well, actually, I believe there is a planet Sharon in Discovery. Oh,
that's true. Okay, the planet Sue.
The planet Karen.
Karen. Oh.
Also known as Earth.
Well, let's move on and talk about importance to canon then. What has Aquiel done for us lately?
Nothing.
Lately, we got to see our first, maybe our first, subspace relay station.
Mm-hmm.
And spoiler alert, Amy, close your ears. We get to see a Federation subspace relay station in the most recent episode of Prodigy.
This is true.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, and Amy.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Joe. Lower Decks has kind of given this episode a little more depth for me, because we see Aquiel, who clearly is not a good officer. It's in her record. She's belligerent. She's defiant. And she basically got shuttled off to a relay station. I saw a lot of similarities between her and Mariner. Mariner, ooh, often belligerent, very defiant. recently gets shuttled off to, not a relay station, but not a desirable station. Difference being, Mariner has parents in high places. Aquiel does not. And so I thought that was kind of interesting.
But with Geordi trying to put in a good word for her, she sort of has that advocacy that Mariner has. So again, that strengthens your comparison. I like that. Mm.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Geordi for a minute?
Yeah.
Because as soon as you see Geordi starting his investigation, wandering around her bedroom, touching her books, you just think, oh, he's like in love with her after like the first touch of the first book. Seeing her face for the first time, he's deeply, madly in love with her, like they've been together for years. Mm-hmm. Which is just another example of Geordi being like dead creepy again.
Yeah, and why would he have his shoes off long enough for the dog to chew both of them? Like, how comfortable are you getting in her quarters? You're obviously there during work hours. And if you're working, your boots should be on.
Well, I'd take mine off. But
you don't sit at your desk and take your shoes off when you're marking papers?
No.
No.
The moment I walk through a door, my shoes are off.
You must have the most comfortable shoes ever.
Well, it's not allowed to have your shoes off. Like, it's...
Oh.
No. Because in case of an emergency, you've got to get out.
I'll get out in my socks. though, actually, so that's another thing about this episode that got me thinking. We have this episode and we have Leah Brahms with the hologram. Booby trap, I think. Where Geordi... So there's a hologram and there's a dead woman. They're both safe. So Geordi can fall in love with them or whatever because they're safe. They're not real people. He doesn't have to worry about getting hurt or anything. So I think, Geordi seeing her, and she's beautiful, seeing her logs and kind of getting to know her a little bit. But she's a dead woman, so he's got nothing to lose. So of course he can, fall in love with her if you can, I guess, in your mind. So when she does show up, I guess she was this fantasy that he could be in love with and be safe with. But then when she actually shows up in person, I guess now I can see why he got taken with her so quickly.
No, I still cannot.
Yeah, if she wasn't in it and it was the dog, he would have fallen in love with the dog. He finds out the dog's female and he's like, starts humping the dog or something.
Oh my gosh, Joe.
I mean, that's just what we've come to expect from Geordi. He's deprived.
And again, like, it's sort of the same thing with Leah Brahms, like on the second episode where she is alive, it's the same story on repeat. It's, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Yes. So he sees Leah and then she's like, what you did was wrong and I feel uncomfortable and blah, blah, blah. And so does she. She's like, I felt vulnerable and exposed because I was sharing my deepest secrets and you've read them? Like, it's so parallel. They should have come up with something different for Geordi, a different type of love story. They did different types of love stories with Troy, with Crusher. I mean, Crusher got transfiguration, got the host, got the ghost candle. Ugh. Like, those are different love stories.
Right.
Why is Geordi on wash and repeat?
They were trying to do something here. Like, they were, this episode was written to try to give Geordi a recurring romantic interest.
Yeah, but it's the same.
Yeah, but they were so they were going for murder mystery as meet cute, and it didn't. They were trying to reference like old sort of noir films like Laura, and it just they got overwhelmed by technobabble because they had to come up with a mystery that their technology couldn't solve. So I don't know.
In terms of the murder mystery, I definitely got Murder, She Wrote with Angela Lansbury.
For sure. No, but honestly, I think it's true to character for Geordi. He's so insecure in his relationships with women, as evidenced over and over. So I think this was a little less creepy than Booby Trap in that he you know, everyone thought she was dead. So yeah, he's going through her personal logs, which he wouldn't have done had they suspected she was still alive. But again, when someone's that insecure about stuff, you look for something safe. Like when you're so afraid of rejection, you know, who can not reject you? Who's safe? Someone who's dead. So I get that aspect of it. Now, him, you know, making out with her while she's terrified and vulnerable and all this stuff. Okay, that's a different story, but.
And even after Riker said, don't do it.
Yes, which Troy would have had to apologize for doing something, you know, for hooking up with someone who wasn't being investigated. But did Geordi have to apologize? Was he, that part kind of annoyed me. But.
And when Riker came in and was like, step aside, get it back, you know, he should have trusted Riker. And stepped back. And instead, he stepped in front of her to protect her. Come on. You've had 6 years with this crew with, you know, you need to trust Riker. You just met this person. I didn't believe that with Geordi's character.
But that was after their sexual mind melt.
Yes. So he could have been influenced.
Oh, I was thinking he knew what was in her thoughts because like he knew she was innocent because they had done that.
That could be. But really on the other hand, he is a Starfleet officer.
Yeah.
And it's his duty to follow the orders of his superior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really hope in Picard season 3 they've fixed his love life and he's got a wife and kids.
He has to leave kids to go.
And his wife is Aquiel. I was thinking that when I was rewatching it. That would be hilarious.
I don't want like Picard to go visit him in this house, wherever he lives, and accidentally open up a cupboard and loads of Leia Brams blow up balls fall out, a bit like the Tribbles falling in Kirk. Yeah, fix his love life, please, if you're listening.
Yeah, I hope he's gotten his stuff together, but if Aquiel's his wife, that would be awesome.
So, Rhea, there is another character on this show from one of your soap operas. Mora the Dog was played by Friday, who was Robert Scorpio's dog on General Hospital.
No way.
That's cool.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. And Robert Scorpio is still on General Hospital. I'm sure the dog's dead, but that's awesome.
There's another thing in Aquiel's favor.
Yeah.
Well, have we talked about Aquiel enough? Shall we move on?
Please.
Loud as a whisper. Amy, regale us with the tale of Loud as a Whisper.
Loud as a Whisper starts out with the Enterprise picking up Reva, who is a mediator who communicates through a chorus. One person speaks as a scholar and judgment, but also the dreamer and artist. Another speaks with passion, the romance, and also the warrior. And then you have the third, who is the harmony of the two, speaking with wisdom and reason. So they pick up Reva and they go to this warring planet who has been at civil war for generations, 15 generations. And so they beam down to have the two sides come together, but one is a radical and tries to kill Reva because he doesn't want peace. And and Riker grabs Reva at the last moment, and then the chorus get obliterated, disintegrated down to their bones. It's very gruesome. Very similar to Conspiracy, which was season one. So now Reva has no way to communicate, and it's that struggle to overcome. And in the end, they convince Reva that it is through this disadvantage that can be turned into an advantage. And by the two factions learning how to communicate with Reva, they will learn to communicate with each other. And that is the episode. Oh my gosh, it's so good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So why don't we take a look at the guest stars who were in this episode?
Howie Sego is the one who played Reva. And he was amazing. He was absolutely amazing. And he actually is deaf. And I'm so glad they didn't try to put a hearing person into this role. But he, I just thought he was incredible as Reva. And really creepy when the script called for it.
Creepy?
Well, the hitting on Troy part.
Okay, let's just talk about that. Because I don't feel that it's creepy. I feel that there is a natural connection between them, in part because of their roles as communicating with others. Like, I feel it more as a professional on the verge of becoming something. I did not take it as creepy at all. I think Troy was in a spot where it's like, oh, maybe there is something there, but I'm at work. So how do I balance it? Well, let's do it after work, which is the appropriate time that they share dinner. Like, it's, to me, so realistic. How many times do you meet someone where maybe there's a potential chemistry, and then trying to balance, when are we going to find the time? Is it appropriate? Should we find the time? That's what I see their relationship.
And okay, I agree with you, Amy. And I take back the creepy part, because I think what it wasn't him that was creepy. It was Troy's. She appeared early on in the episode very visibly uncomfortable. And there were probably four or five scenes where every time they cut to her, she looked so uncomfortable with him. And I don't think that later Troy would have done that. This was season two. I think later Troy, and maybe it was, I don't know if it was in the script or if it was acting choices by Marina, but I do think that later Troy would have been less uncomfortable and more confident about it. And I agree with you. And also, I was thinking that too, watching it, like, how many times have I been in this situation at work or wherever, except that, I thought, how many times have I been in this situation where I don't want this creepy guy hitting on me at work? And maybe that's why it came across to me as creepy, where it's like, dude, back the off. And like thinking back to the 90s, where this was every single day at work, where we were just fair game to be objectified and hit on and stuff, even at work. So that's probably why it really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, but I think their dinner scene, she's agreeing, like, she agrees to have dinner. It's with her consent. I just think that awkwardness was, it's like, oh, we're at work right now. Let's keep it professional and we can deal with that aside, which I think they did.
Yeah, no, I agree. She definitely warmed up to him for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I didn't find it kind of creepy. It was more about ick that you're asking me out in front of all my work colleagues.
Right.
Without giving me any inkling that you were interested in the first place. Like, right off the bat.
Which was really... I sort of thought, like, Troy could escort me.
Wink, wink. Yeah, that really establishes.
I don't want to go out with a member of the Bee Gees. Thanks very much.
Yes, now that you say that, absolutely.
Yes,
but it really establishes his character, his not just confidence, but outright cockiness, and that's just another way that it manifests.
Mm. Yeah. So I know, Kevin, that you want to get to guest stars' importance to canon, but I have some things to. go over if you don't mind?
Sure.
Okay, listeners, if you've listened to me at all, you know that I absolutely love this episode. And every time I watch it, I get new stuff. And so I have a couple of nitpicks that I want to go over with you guys because I want to see your take on it. So why does Picard, Riker, even Worf not know that Reva is deaf and speaks with a chorus? Like, they act surprised when they meet him. Well, didn't he negotiate the peace between the Klingon and Federation? Like, why would they not know this? Don't they know that they have to have accommodations for four people and not just one person? Wouldn't they know that?
Like, you would think.
Yeah. Okay, so that's just a bad story plot. Mm-hmm.
I think okay. So, yeah.
Which I don't think would have happened in later seasons.
Right, yeah. And then one thing that I really wanted to discuss was his chorus, serving him for life. Mm-hmm. And it says that it's been a tradition in our planet from the ruling line mm-hmm. of family. So to me, that gives me tones of like monarchy and maybe like
subservience.
Yeah. Is his chorus the, are they slaves?
Are they indentured servants? Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
Like Mr. Home. I mean, it's because she's kind of heir to the Holy Rings. Mm-hmm. Holder of the Chalice of Reeks and something about Sacred Rings as well. Yeah, Mr. Holmes, her personal valet. And she's kind of semi-royalty.
Yeah.
So do we... I mean, I don't think I like that. And so what I did in my headcanon was, well, the chorus is doing this by choice because they are serving the cause of what he is doing, his purpose of being a mediator, of creating peace in the galaxy,
right.
That they are supporting him by being his chorus.
Yeah, not everybody gets the chance to do it. It's a really good gig if you can get it, because you're going to be serving the ruling family. It's about like being one of Beyonce's backing singers.
Yeah, actually, that's a great way to put it. Because I think we have to be careful not to impose our Western sensibilities and morals onto this different planet where, you know, for us to be subservient or something is a very, very bad thing. But I don't know. I mean, we would say a caste system is bad, but in that culture, perhaps it's okay. I mean, it would be an honor to be one of Beyonce's backup dancers. Mm-hmm. Do it.
It would.
Yeah.
Okay. One other thing that I totally loved was when Reva and Troy are in their dinner together and they excuse the hot looking chorus guy who's passion and romance.
Great okay, casting.
Get it together, Nelson. But so he's like talking and she's, you know, interpreting his sign language and they're like, we can communicate, we can share together, we can talk about big ideas like dreams. And that really took me back to Eleanor Roosevelt's quote that says, small minds discuss people, average minds discuss events, great minds discuss ideas. And that just reinforced this connection that Reva and Troy have together because they are two great minds discussing big ideas. And I just really loved that moment that I didn't pick up before until to now.
Huh.
Nice.
Interesting.
Okay. One other thing.
Oh, you got another thing? I was going to suggest that we be small-minded and discuss more people.
Well, do we have one more idea to discuss?
Yes,
please. A great-minded one, Amy?
Okay, so I really liked at the very end, and I'll just close with this since I know I have more, but that's okay. When Picard calls Troy into his ready room and gives a well-deserved thank you to Troy. We don't see that enough. I almost wish that he would do that a little bit more with all of his crew, but we get to see that when Troy literally saved the mission by talking to Reva and having getting him to agree. I just thought that was so important. And he starts out, he's like, you read me well enough to know I already am gracious, but I'm going to say the words because words are important. In this episode of communication, saying the words is important. And I just really appreciated that. Okay, Joe, what other people can we talk about?
Can we talk about Marnie Moseman?
We should talk about Marnie Moseman.
Because she was married to someone who was also on General Hospital. John DeLancey. Oh, he was also in Star Trek. But this is John DeLancey's wife.
Yes.
But she was one of the chorus. The female.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know this.
Her son was also in Star Trek.
Well, yes, I did know that.
Both of their sons were in Star Trek.
Yes.
Egan and Owen.
Owen too? What was
yes.
he in?
Yes, apparently, yeah.
Really?
According to Memory Alpha.
This is where I'm getting my information as well.
Really? What was Owen in?
Oh, it was Star Trek World Tour. Which was...
Is that a game?
I have no idea, actually. 1998.
He would have been a pretty young teenager. But I think it's awesome that they're still married to this day after like 40 years.
She was also on Knott's Landing, Dallas, Hill Street Blues, Remington Steel.
Star Trek World Tour was a traveling museum exhibit. And Owen DeLancey played Q's son.
Okay.
Keegan DeLancey then went on to play Q's son, the same role in the Voyager episode, Q2.
And he was awesome in that role. He was so funny.
We should also mention Leo Damian, who, weirdly, who was the hot chorus guy, the lust passion guy. He was in an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
But his CV is not very long. He did not work as an actor for very long.
He could be a model. Am I right, Amy? And the other chorus member, Randy Oglesby, he's only one of five actors to portray seven different Star Trek characters, along with Jeffrey Combs, J.G. Hertzler, Von Armstrong, and Thomas Kopachi, who I don't really know. But he had quite a few characters in Enterprise.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was also in a couple of DS9 episodes and Voyager. Oh, no, maybe he only had one or two characters in Enterprise.
He was Degra. He played Degra, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Recurring.
Oh,
Zindi.
That's cool.
Yeah, I did not know that he was in Loud as a Whisper.
I'm glad we're talking about guest stars.
Yeah, me too.
So, those are your guest stars. Oh, did we talk about Reva himself? Where he came from?
Briefly. This was his only Star Trek appearance.
And it was his idea, right? This didn't he send this idea to the producers?
Oh my gosh, did he? Because that's awesome.
Okay, we have to mention Richard Lavin, who was one of he was a Solari leader, one of the factions. He was also the second Edo mediator in Justice. Yeah, the
what?
Police line with the kind of the grey on, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's nice. Looking up the aliens.
Yeah, definitely.
This Chip Heller. He was the other leader guy. nothing of note, but he's been in 150 films and TV shows.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. And then there was John Garrett, who again, he was a dancer in both Grease films.
And an uncredited extra, Michael Braveheart, he's done a bunch of Star Trek stuff. He's been in, he had a recurring character, Martinez, in TNG and also in First Contact and Insurrection. And he's also been in Voyager, a bunch of uncredited characters left and right. Enterprise, pretty much all uncredited.
He's just in the background.
Cool. Yeah.
Yep.
You take the work where you can get it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Hey, you can't have a show without the background. So
Howie Seago did petition the producers of Star Trek to create a show about deaf people.
Hmm.
And he also, in the original draft, he learned how to speak overnight through a mechanical translator. And it was Howie Seago who said, no, let's scrap this. And he suggested the ending where they learned to speak sign language together.
Oh, that's awesome. That's
the perfect ending. Yes. So good.
Yeah. And that's something, again, if they had used a hearing individual, I would have been so disappointed, but because he's so expressive and he's so beautiful in his signing. And then there's the one scene, here's my nitpick, when Data learns how to sign to communicate with him, and Riva can hear, and Picard's speaking to him, and Data is signing, again, very poorly. I'm just, to Riva, when Riva, you know, can hear, and I'm just like, Data, why are you signing? Put your hands down. Put those android hands down.
Riva can't hear?
Yeah, he can't hear, but read lips is what you mean to say.
He's deaf.
Oh, read lips. I'm sorry. He can read. Yeah. He can understand. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Thank you. It's like, Data, why are you signing? Put your hands down.
Yeah, I sort of thought that too. I was like, well, he can read lips, but it's okay. I let it fly.
Which leads to, I guess, another nitpick is there are a few times, and again, I don't think this would have happened in later seasons, but when the chorus is first killed, like the one scene where Picard is grabbing him and shaking him and shouting at him, why are you shouting at a deaf man? You know, like...
Well, I do like that scene in the moment. Like, sometimes you just can't control the volume of your voice. And so, but he's still saying it, reading the lips, you know, to Riva. And what he's saying is remarkable. You are not alone.
Yeah.
We are all in this together. Like, how comforting, whether he's screaming it or not, he's saying the words, and Riva is hearing it.
I guess that I know if it were me, I'd be like, why are you shaking me? Why are you, you know, being so aggressive and screaming at me? Where if you want to say you're not alone, we're in this together.
Yeah.
Say it calmly. But again, just another nitpick I had.
But I do like how Riva is very self-reflective and he recognizes his arrogance. And he's like, I didn't see this coming and I'm now nothing without my chorus. Like, it's a big realization because he does have this tinge of, I'm better than you, this arrogance, this ego about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that takes a big person.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about importance to canon with this episode?
Yes. I don't think there was a lot of continuity except for maybe that scene where Pulaski was offering Geordi some alternatives to the visor. Yes.
Agreed. That's about it. And we hardly ever hear about that again, right? She offers it, he says no, and
then in Insurrection, I guess his eyes are regenerated, but
and does he have eyes? Does he have normal human eyes now?
No, he's got bionic eyes. Or
yeah. So what I think the technology advanced where they could take the processes of the visor and put it inside the eye, and so that's why he has those now normal looking eyes.
Mm-hmm. So he had Nemesis. He could see an Insurrection, and then they left the briar patch in the Baku world, and he was blind again.
No, because wasn't in First Contact, he didn't have his visor, right?
He had the...
He had his eyeballs.
Ocular implants?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then Insurrection,
his implants were hurting in Insurrection when his eyes were healing. So he got the implants in First Contact.
Yeah. Okay. But what did he have in Nemesis?
His implants.
Ocular implants.
So... After Insurrection, he went blind again.
Apparently.
Yes.
Because he could see with his real eyes.
Yeah. And I guess everyone's boobs got less perky, too. It happens. But another canon, influence to canon, was just, I guess, the mention between the peace treaty between the Klingons and the Federation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we do learn about that Reva helped do that. That's important.
Yeah. And didn't Worf say before him there was no Klingon word for peacemaker?
Yeah.
That's why Worf doesn't like him.
Right.
Okay, the effects of the metaphysic radiation in Insurrection were temporary. And so that's why Nemesis had to go back to using his cybernetic eyes.
Right. And then the women had to go back to using bras.
Ugh, bras.
All right. Well, that I think that pretty much sums up Loud as a Whisper, don't you think? Any other final thoughts about Loud as a Whisper before we move on?
Well, I will always have one final comment, but Troy's lips looked fabulous. Her makeup was spot on. There was some kind of like sparkle. It was perfection. I loved it.
And compared to Aquiel, where Troy only had one word of dialogue in the whole episode.
I bought a new TV a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And Troy's pale complexion that Troy has in this episode kind of jumped out at me. I thought she was maybe dressed up for Halloween as Casper, the Friend of the Ghost. She's paler than Data. And the contrast of the black contact lenses, the red lipstick, and the white face.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the opposite of doing blackface. Like the complete opposite. No. And she was very, 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 very white.
All right, I'm gonna
maybe
have to
they were filming. Maybe they were filming this during the winter, and she didn't have her summer tan.
Maybe your white balance is off on your new TV.
Nobody else looks like that white. So
one of my sisters is pretty white, has really dark hair and really white skin. So I mean, it happens with Greeks.
But... No, I disagree. Her makeup was beautiful.
Another thing,
spoken.
Yeah. Another thing I thought was awesome was the vaporization scene of the chorus. Like, I loved that effect. I mean, it's so cheesy. It is very conspiracy-ish. Yes. And the way all three of them are like,
Yes. But it is total conspiracy.
And the whole concept.
It is very conspiracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole concept of the chorus. That's probably my favorite thing about this episode. I love when they kind of explore different types of beings or whatever, and I just love that whole concept that these three people are so in tune to this one individual and express his thoughts, and I love the way they speak. I thought they did such a good job with it, all three chorus members, and plus Reva's face and Reva's expressions. I absolutely love that. I'd love to see like a whole planet full of that's what Lower Decks should do. They should go to that planet. Oh no,
that's what I was gonna say. This would be a perfect, you know, swing by mission for Lower Decks.
Yes
to go pick up Reva. I mean, they've got to pick him up.
He's been there for 10 years.
Yeah
Does he have a new chorus? Inquiring minds want to know. I want to know.
Well, we did get some listener feedback on our poll. So should we read some what our listeners have to say about these two episodes?
Yes.
Amy, would you like to go ahead and read about what Karen said?
Oh, Karen, what am I going to do with you? I had to vote against Loud as a Whisper. Oh, Karen, the way Reva leered at Troy made me uncomfortable. She seemed uncomfortable too, but her words said she liked him. Then again, in Aquiel, Geordi got creepy by falling in love with a dead person's personal log entries. I enjoyed the mystery in Aquiel. Well, thank you, Karen. Hopefully, after listening to this episode, you won't see Reva leering at Troy.
I felt the exact same way coming in, Karen. I'm like, oh, this is two episodes of creepy romance issues.
Then we have a comment from Jim McMahon, who says, neither is a favorite, but I picked Loud as a Whisper. Even though it doesn't age well, I like the ending better. Both sides having... both sides of the dispute having to learn sign language, and then Aquiel, which was basically the dog did it.
Yeah.
Your and dog's whole... doing it too, Joe.
Yeah. Definitely. There's another thing I love too. Both sides having to learn sign language to communicate. That's so beautiful. Greg Malumbi says, the only thing I remember about Aquiel is the dog. It was a pretty boring episode other than that. I've gained a new appreciation for Loud as a Whisper because of Amy Nelson and because they genuinely cast a deaf guy for the role. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Brian Smith said Loud as a Whisper had the lesson to take a disadvantage and make it an advantage. Also, the very cool and unique phaser effect of the chorus and Rebel being shot. Mm-hmm. And I like the ending. Let's all learn sign language together. Aquiel had, as somebody said already, the dog did it. Also, creepy Geordi and reading the dead person's logs. So,
it's like we're all on the same page.
After Brian's comment, I was like, well, we don't even need to record an episode. Brian has summed it up perfectly. Thank you for your comment.
Well, that brings us to the vote. Shall I reveal the results of the listener vote first?
Yeah,
sure.
So because it's shocking.
It was close. It was a very close vote. 59% of our listeners who responded to the poll voted for Loud as a Whisper, 41% for Aquiel.
Listeners, It should not be that close. I don't understand, really, truly.
I really think it has to do with season two, you know, still working out the kinks thing. I think if Loud as a Whisper were done in a later season, then it would be considered one of the best.
Or if it was Crusher instead of Pulaski.
And if Crusher got to say cellular residue.
Okay, so that brings us to our vote. Let's start with Rhea. Rhea, where would you like to place your vote for this episode?
So coming in, you know, I don't hate Aquiel as much as the entire rest of the world does. It's leaps and bounds above, say, I don't know, Sub Rosa. I wanted to kind of defend its honor a little bit, but ultimately my vote goes to Loud as a Whisper. It's just, again, love the chorus. I love Reva. I love turning a disadvantage to an advantage.
Excellent. Joe.
Before I watched both episodes, I wasn't entirely sure which way I was going to vote. But then I watched Loud as a Whisper, directly followed by Aquiel. Aquiel is a hot pile of trash. deserves to be dumped in a black hole. And Loud as a Whisper is quite enjoyable. Even though Troy's makeup is a pile of hot trash. I am going to vote for Loud as a Whisper.
Amy, you're going to surprise us?
No. I didn't think so. Well, it definitely has to go to Loud as a Whisper. I've mentioned before, I have used this episode in a communication class that I taught at school. I love that idea of communication. I mean, that's why Discovery Season 4 is like my favorite, because of Species 10C and how we communicate. So that thread of communication, it's a fabulous Troy episode where she gets the appreciation. She does her job. She's an excellent officer and saves the day. and then we get Aquiel, and it just, It's boring. There's no stakes involved. I mean, I know we complain that the new Trek has too big of stakes. Well, this just wasn't even, I just didn't care. Maybe the Klingons did it. It just was boring. And I really can't believe that that is a season six episode. It does not live up to season six. So absolutely Loud as a Whisper gets my vote each and every time forever and ever.
Yeah, I would have to pick Loud as a Whisper here as well. So that makes it unanimous on our point, on our part. Sorry, listeners who love Aquiel. So that means that when we get to the next round of the Batleth battle, Aquiel will face the episode that got a bye from the first round, and that is Tin Man. So that should be an interesting matchup.
Kevin?
No, I'm Kevin,
sorry. I'm going to have to edit this.
And Hollow Pursuits.
Yeah. This is going up again. So
Loud as a Whisper.
Yeah. Loud as a Whisper. We'll move on to the next round where it will face the episode that got a bye from round one, and that was Hollow Pursuits. So our next Batleth battle is should be interesting as well. It is season 3, episode 20's Tin Man. And it will go up against Hide and Cue, which is season 1, episode 10. Any initial thoughts on those two episodes?
That's not going to be interesting at all. Tin Man wins that hands down, purely based on its soundtrack.
Oh.
Oh.
You don't like having to see Riker with Q powers?
There's no comparison.
And Tin Man is a great Troi episode, really getting the backstory of her, you know, education and pursuits in psychology. So
I'm undecided right now. So
yeah, me too.
We'll see.
So join us in a few weeks when we will have Batleth Battle 29, Tin Man versus Hyde and Q.
Incoming transmission.
So we would love to hear what you thought of today's episode, and we hope you will join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. So you can also tweet your thoughts to @GalaxyClassPod, and we would love for you to reach out. You can also follow the network on Twitter and Instagram @BQNPodcasts.
Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show. So, Joe, where can people find you when Cooper is transforming into who knows?
As some kind of hell beast, which is what he is normally, so there would be no difference.
Oh. You're on mute.
Accidentally hit it. Where did I get to? Yeah, okay. So you can get me on the BQN, our Facebook group. You can tweet me on the Twitter @JoeyJoe77UK. And you can also email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com. And Rhea, where can people find you when you're hacking into our online diaries to learn all about our secrets?
When I am not hacking into your online diaries, watching all your personal logs and secretly falling in love with you, you can find me posting thinly veiled love letters on the BQN Collective and also Star Trek memes. And that's pretty much it. In terms of online presence. So Kevin, where can people find you when you are not vaporizing all the naughty children who come to see Santa Scarf?
Oh, sometimes you wish you could do that. But it's usually parents. It's parents you want to vaporize the kids.
Yeah, I bet.
But if I'm not doing that, you can find me on the BQN Collective. I'm there quite often. You can listen to me on True North Nerds. We just released an episode about the movie Black Adam. And Amy, where can people find you when you're being seduced by a sexy deaf ginger?
Ooh. Well, you can find me here on the network talking about it.
Woo!
Now, I will be talking on Union Federation, which is talking about the new Star Trek. You can also find me on All Good Things, which is sort of all of Star Trek. I am also on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place right there on Facebook at the BQN Collective.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
If you would like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We're putting out more exclusive content for our patrons that you won't want to miss, like It's Green or Amy's Math Moments. With a monthly Patreon subscription of $5 or more, you can join our Meetings of the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Watch your Patreon messages for details. If you feel so inclined, please check out all the details at patreon.com/BQN. A huge shout out to our very own associate producer, the one and only Jim McMahon, the host of Trivia with Jim, and Davey Willett. We are so grateful for your support. And wait a minute, Davey Willett, Amy, Joe, is there something we should know?
Well, he's the host of Trexpert Quiz. That's something you should know. Joe?
Any special guests coming up?
You're on mute.
You're Joe's on mute. Still on mute. Joe's going to keep talking on mute.
No. Ah, there you go. I couldn't get my mouse. Yeah, Amy and I are going head to head next week on episode 5 or 6 of
Trexperts.
And we've been given a clue, which isn't a clue about the...
Oh, yeah. Listen to this. Our clue is... We don't need a clue.
I think maybe our clue should be we don't have a clue.
Yeah.
We're each getting 0 points.
Well, it is out there on Twitter of like, I asked the question, who's going to win? And I have more votes.
I know. However, people don't know how rubbish you are. So. Yeah, I'm not confident.
So if I'm rubbish, then you are just below that because you didn't get any votes. I'm just saying, thank you, Calvin.
I'm so quite rubbish. I am going to watch all of TNG. I think rubbish, the fact that we are TNG podcasters might mean that's what the fact that we don't need a hint is. It's all going to be about TNG, which means we have to watch all 179 episodes between now and next Saturday.
And the movies,
yeah.
Oh. I hope it is TNG.
Better be.
Because if it's...
Otherwise, I'll be like, Angela Lansbury.
I'll go with the queen. Yeah.
Well, good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
I will be listening. That should be fun. Well, thank you for beaming aboard the Galaxy Class. And until next time...
Oh, cluck, 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 number one, sir. You're being a mother hen. Stay classy, Galaxy.
I am the passion, the libido. I am the anarchy of lust, the romantic and the lover. I am also the warrior, the perfect line which never wavers.
Great joy and gratitude.
Geordi, I'm scared. Ending.